This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Final preparations are in full swing for this weekend's Wooden Boat Festival, so this week we bring you two related stories, one about the joys and pains of wooden boat maintenance, and the other about a Port Townsend resident who is once again providing the festival with the benefit of his family's generations of experience in building carousels. So now let's go inside the Compass. There's nothing to spark joy in the heart of a wooden boat lover like the shine of several fresh coats of varnish on those exposed wooden parts known as the bright work. But where there is joy, there's also pain. It seems to take only the briefest period of inattention and the elements to render those parts anything but bright, and the process of putting them back into shipshape requires hours of patient scraping, sanding, stripping, brushing, wiping, buffing, cleaning, and then starting all over again. I decided to take the opportunity at the Wooden Boat Festival a couple of years ago to interview several boat owners and a few self-avowed experts on the subject of wood treatment and the ratio of work to pleasure in wooden boat ownership. I started with my friend Gary Frederick, who was sitting with his wife Nancy in the cockpit of their sloop Juno on a Thursday evening, watching the approach of a lightning storm and leaning comfortably against a particularly lustrous wooden combing.
Oh, well, I found the holy grail of wood finishes, which to me is Seatall Natural Teak. It is so easy to use. Just once a year, take a Scotch-Brite pad, wipe everything down, put a couple coats on, and that's what I've been doing on this boat the last couple of years, and the bright work all looks good. Yeah, so.
All right, so the next question is, what is the ratio of maintenance to sailing on this boat?
Well, I sail a lot, so I would imagine my maintenance is at least 50% of my time.
The next day I wandered around, asking other boat owners which products they favored, and the answers were almost as various as the boats themselves, ranging from nothing but salt water for teak to this or that oil or varnish. One captain simply explained it like this: first you sand, then you varnish, then you sand again, then you varnish again, then you start over. When I asked which brand of varnish he favored, he said it didn't matter, just so long as it was varnish. After a while, I spotted a stall featuring things like pine tar and natural fiber rope, with a large display right up front with variously sized tins of a product called Le Tonkinois. I asked the salesman, who wore a name tag identifying him as Bill, and had the aspect of a seasoned sailor in old salt, what his preferred treatment was for wood.
Paint, yeah.
No. So no bright work, in other words.
Well, actually,
painted wood services only.
We sell a very interesting varnish that is Le Tonkinois varnish. It's from France. The French discovered this varnish when they had their colonies in Indochina and brought it out, built a factory in France in 1906. And they don't know how old this formula is because they found it, you know, it was in use when they found it.
Is the formula a secret?
It's not so much the ingredients that are secret, it's how you cook the varnish that's proprietary. There's a cooking method. So it's mainly linseed oil, tung oil, and some other tropical oils that are cooked with some phenolic resin. So it's very easy to use. It applies like an oil, but it has a varnished finish. Very little sanding involved. You just sand to clean and smooth the surface. You don't have to create a tooth for the next coat. It'll go right over itself. It just needs to be cleaned.
And how often do you have to be doing this?
Well, we suggest 6 to 8 coats for exterior use on a boat. In this climate up here, it's not unusual for people to get a couple of years out of six or eight coat base.
And then another 6 or 8 coats.
Actually, from there, you watch the gloss. The maintenance thing is to watch the gloss. When the gloss gets dull, it's time to recoat. And you put on 2 maintenance coats, and it jumps back. So it's very green. It doesn't have noxious vapors that come off. So it smells nice, and you can use it easily inside your boat, that kind of thing. So it's very popular in Europe, where it's green qualities. They're a little more green conscious than the Americans are these days.
Now, I have a friend who's a fine furniture maker, and he insists that the only oil to use is tung oil. Now, this has tung oil in it.
It does.
But he just uses pure tung oil, which he cuts with terps or something. Yeah,
you should cut it with turpentine. Tung oil has very small molecules, so it penetrates into the wood cells deeply. That's its benefit. And it produces a beautiful lustrous finish. It's not gleaming. It's a glowing finish. So La Tonkawa has a lot of tung oil in it. So that's one reason it penetrates. So that's one reason for its longevity. It never cracks or peels because it's not synthetic. It's not brittle. The wood on a boat is constantly in motion. It's expanding and contracting with the moisture and the temperature and so forth. And with that's what eventually lifts a brittle varnish, is that movement underneath. And La Tonkawa has enough movement in itself. It can move with that.
Well, I have a technique on my boat that that none of my friends approve of, and I call it my dark work. And see, what I do is, I take advantage of that fact that wood turns dark with time. And so what I do, instead of sanding it and oiling it again, and I just skip the whole sanding step, and I just oil it, and I oil it again, and then I oil it. And so it's dark.
Well, we sell other products besides varnish. We sell pine tar, genuine kiln-burnt pine tar. And if you mix boiled linseed oil, gum turpentine, and pine tar together, you make a very nice wood oil. It's the traditional wood oil. Some people call it boat sauce. Some people call it Humboldt Bay deck soup. There's a lot of different names for it. So if you're an oiler, you might think about your pine tar, linseed oil, and turpentine.
I think oil is really good for if you put it on all the time. But of course, being black, it's going to get hotter in the sun. I've seen boats that have gone to Mexico and started to break up because they got too hot. And I have a neighbor who continues to put oil on his mast. His mast is pretty much black at this point in time.
My masts were oiled when I bought the boat, but I was persuaded to paint them.
Well, that's better
that's
protection.
A very good idea. I think a painted mast forestalls a lot of that rot.
It's easier to last longer. I mean, you paint it, it's good for years if you've got a good coat of paint on. And a couple of coats will do it instead of six. So it's a whole lot easier.
Well, it gets right back to where we started when I first asked you what to do with your bright work, and you said paint it.
UV destroys everything. That's the thing. It destroys everything, eventually.
Wandering on, I encountered several teenagers raising the sails of one of the longboats belonging to the Community Boat Project. I stopped there for a chat with the captain. Now, I have a subject that I'm asking all the boat people I'm talking to today, which is what to do with bright work.
Paint it over.
You're the second person who's advised that first. Even, the first one was actually somebody who has a product to sell. But this is not painted over here. There is...
Well, I'll tell you that we... everybody likes a little bit of varnish, and... First of all, oil is so much easier than varnish. So almost all this is just oiled. That's pure penetrol. And then we started with these things being varnished. And first it was a 1-inch strip. Then it was a 2-inch strip. Now it's out to a 4-inch strip of paint. With any luck, I'll paint the entire thing over next year.
Close by the longboat, I encountered Casey Cronkite, who for 10 years managed the Wooden Boat Festival, but who now was just one of the exhibitors, there with her storied sailboat, Pax.
I am literally just hanging out like a boater at the Wooden Boat Festival.
So how's that feel?
Fantastic. Can you tell?
So have you actually been able to enjoy your boat this year more than in the past because you're not doing the boat festival?
I have been out sailing more than all the rest of the years combined that I've owned the boat since 2007. I cleaned the soot off the ceiling of the cabin with a new product that Joni Blanchard just told me about, because I'm in the boat haven now and hanging around more, talking to people. So, oh my gosh, I've spent hours and hours and hours.
Well, that's interesting to me, because actually one of the things I'm asking people about today is boat maintenance, and particularly about bright work, woodwork, and products that they use and recommend. And so far, every answer has been as different as the boats I've been on. So what is that product?
Well, in reference to what you just said, one of the things I remember years ago in one of my first wooden boat festivals, we started a thing called Ask a Shipwright. And one of the things Matt said, who owns Sea Marine now, he said, if you don't like the answer, ask another shipwright. But the product she told me about is actually a car product. It's in car, like a West Bay Auto. And it's Meguiar's number 2. And it's a fine paste polish and cleaner. And it literally took nail rust just like that off my hull. Not heavy toxins and not heavy rubbing on my part. I wiped it on with a cloth. I wiped it off with a cloth.
Did you have to glove up?
I didn't.
Wear a mask?
I actually did wear a glove on the hand that I was using the rag, but I don't. There was nothing about it. I didn't need a respirator, and I didn't need, you know, I didn't have to worry about what else it was going to do to my paint. It literally just knocked the oxidation off and the stain, and it left a shine. So she uses it for refurbishing glossy enamel and varnish.
So how do you treat your bright work, the wood that's exposed to the sun and the elements?
Well, Pax has both teak and mahogany and yellow cedar on it. The teak that's exposed to sun, I think gray is beautiful. I've left it unfinished. I give it a little scrub. It's best with salt water, not fresh water, and a little dull green scrubby, you know, worn out because you don't really want to take out a bunch of wood. Simply salt water and elbow grease is all I put on the teak.
You don't oil it at all?
I don't oil it at all. And the mahogany, though, different story. My cabin top is mahogany, and that is an open grain wood that needs and must have protection from fresh water. So I've put 11 coats of varnish on that. I use Pettit's Flagship, and the reason I've used that product over Epiphanes and some other that are really good Le Tonkinois, French, you know, there are other products that I've heard really great things about, but Diana Talley was one of the first people that I worked with to do any varnish and woodwork in this climate in town, and she used that product. So I started using it, and then once, it is easy. You don't have to mix it. It's not multiple parts. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be thinned. It lasts once the can is open. Then I put on, this year, I put on four coats of maintenance varnish because I didn't varnish last year. So that'll probably last me another year.
So my final question has to do with ratios. This is the ratio of maintenance to pleasure. Or maybe you get pleasure from maintenance, as I do, but maintenance to sailing, shall we say.
Well, you know, that is part of the, you know, that's why Wind in the Willows, you know, Kenneth Graham's quote, there's nothing so great as messing about on boats. It's so reproduced in all of our T-shirts and sayings and everything else. And that includes the maintenance. And I have said to a million people, if you don't enjoy working on them, don't do it. Just charter. Because working on them can take a lot of time. It can, as we get older, certainly as I'm getting older, the aches and pains in my hands and shoulders is different than it when I was younger. But I so enjoy the time just being on the water, being in a buoyant vessel. In my mind, everything I do on the boat is sailing.
This is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News.
I spoke this week with Bill Denzel, a local boat builder and carousel maker, about his plans to set up and run his homemade carousel for kids at this week's Wooden Boat Festival. This colorful and intricately geared machine takes 15 kids for a ride through Port Townsend's biggest event and even back through history. Denzel is from perhaps the most famous carousel designing family in the world, and that business stretches back over 100 years. We met in the elevated ice cream shop where two of Bill's pieces reside full time. We sat in the giraffe glider while we discussed the plans.
We'll keep it slow and your tea will be just fine.
Okay. I'm sitting in elevated ice cream with Bill Denzel, who comes from a long line of carousel makers, carvers, entire family business that goes back how far?
Well, my great-great-grandfather, Michael, was a wagon maker in central southern Germany back in the 1800s. And they started making little carousels and then putting them on their wagons and traveling through Central Europe, Southern Germany, that area. And eventually he sent his sons to America in the 1850s, one of them with a carousel on a sailing ship. And they landed in Philadelphia, and that's where they started. They didn't know whether it was going to work or not. One of them set up a cabinet shop, and one of them set up a bakery, and one of them set up a carousel-making shop. And that's the carousel-making guy is the one we remember. And that was Gustav. Yeah, his father was Michael. So Gustav was my great-grandfather. And then his son, Edward, my grandfather, also did the business. And the business went bankrupt during the Depression. And my father, who was actually a lawyer and did carving on the side, got totally hooked and ended up early retiring and just carving because he loved it so much. And then I sort of took it up as an avocation. I did boat work and housework to make money, because it's not a lot of money in carousels, but I never gave it up and I love it. You know, they ask me what I do, or they'll be looking at something, and I tell them I make carousels, and they're like, what? And, you know, I have sort of to, what, you make those things at airports for suitcases, or, you know, whatever. I try to explain to them, and they say, so you do the animals? I say, no, I actually make the whole thing. And, how does that happen? And I say, it's a lot of work.
So that's right. It isn't just carving. It's like we're on this glider. I'm sitting here with a cup of tea. This thing is as smooth as glass. So there's a lot of mechanics in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little motors and gears.
The animals and the scenic panels are the wonderful decorations and seats for a carousel or one of these rides here at Elevated. But the truth of it is, you've got to have a really well-built, strong mechanism underneath. And that's the guts of the carousel, is the mechanism, so that it runs, so that it's safe, lasts a long time, doesn't have a lot of maintenance issues.
I asked Bill if any of his children were interested in keeping up the family traditions of carousel making.
My kids have helped me in the workshop. They've learned some, but one thing I have to say, the millennial generation, what they learned from me was that it's a lot of hard work, and the digital age was much more appealing to them. Therefore, they decided they were going to go digital and leave this kind of hand stuff to me. And they still love looking at it, but that's about it. We'll see. Maybe when they get older. Actually, I do think when they get older, they're going to say, you know what? I need something real.
I asked Bill what he might need in order to pull off the transport and construction and 3-day operation of the carousel at the Wooden Boat Festival.
I need a little bit of sponsors. I need a little bit of volunteers. I have a little bit of both, but I can always use more. It's a fun event. It's a fun experience. It's actually, there's nothing like it. It's like going back 100 or 200 years and just having a good time in a simple way with kids and families. And it doesn't happen in very many places other than the Port Townsend Wooden Boat Festival.
So tell me about the carousel itself. Like, is it something you put together, or do you need volunteers to put it together?
Well, no, it's this, the little one, it's 20 feet in diameter, carries 15 riders, has 8 animals and a double chariot on it. So that's 10 riders on those animals then, and has 5 swing seats. So it carries 15 riders. I've had it for over 10 years. I've been setting it up at the Wooden Boat Festival, you know, several years. I've had other carousels at the Wooden Boat Festival. This one's ready to go. I take it out on Thursday and set it up. My friend Doug helps me, or other buddies come down and help me set it up. It takes about a day to set up. Then once it's set up, I have some friends who love to be operators and crew, and I'm going to get some other camp kids and counselors, you know, kids supervised by adults. But kids do a great job, I have to say. Yes, they do. In fact, they're stricter than the adults. The adults want everybody to like them, so they sort of slack on the rules, whereas the kids want to let the other kids know who's in charge. And they run the rule. They do it right. If a kid starts standing up on an animal or something like that, he's off. If with an adult, they just tell him, nice, 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 don't do that, and the kid still does it. So, yeah, I like having kid operators.
So what age of kids do you get to do
the age of kids, I pretty much don't go down below 10 years old. I've had 8-year-olds do it, but a 10-year-old can do fine. 12-year-olds are great. And I hate to say this, but the girls are usually better than the boys. The boys make real good testers, though. They'll find the limits of the machine. So they all have their role.
Do you have all of your people that are going to be operating the machine ready to go, or do you need some more folks to take a shift?
I could use another relief crew. I mean, we train the crew, and oftentimes if there's kids involved in the crew, they have to do a lot of riding first so that they get the hang of it. And they can do the hand cranking. It has an electric motor, but we can take the belt off the motor and hand crank it too. So it goes either way.
So do you charge the kids for rides, or how does it work?
For the first several years that I operated at the boat festival, I charged kids. Well, that's not the kids that get charged. It's the parents. And that's part of the problem. And I was a parent for many years, and I understand where they're coming from. You know, you give the kid $1, and the kid gets a ride, and they're like, hey, good, you've had your carousel ride. Well, for a kid, all that means is, yeah, okay, I got my ride. Now I know what I like. Okay, now I'm ready to really do it. They want to ride it 10 times, not one time. And I know how it is for being a parent. I had 10 bucks for this kid and 10 bucks for that kid to get 10 rides. And even 10 rides isn't enough for the normal kids. They want to do it 20 times. So a few years ago, I figured out, someone might have suggested it to me, hey, why not get donations, get a group of people to put in a donation so that I can get some money for setting it up, because it takes me minimum five, actually more than that, probably 6 or 7 if you count the behind-the-scenes stuff, days to set up, operate, and take it down. If I do ride tickets, I've got to keep track of the tickets, take the money from the kids, have a little safe box and all this kind of stuff, and then kids, parents say no, and I feel really bad, then I end up giving free rides, and anyways, this whole thing. So if I get some people who donate, and the donations are $100, I try to get 10 people, I've got 3 so far, to donate, and it can be a group of people can go together and do a group donation of $100 too. But anyway, I try to get 10 sponsors, and then with that and a donation I get from the Wooden Boat Foundation all put together, I can actually say, wow, okay, I'm actually, you know, getting a little bit of money back for all this construction and setup and operation and dragging around. I mean, I love doing it, but you know, this is Port Townsend, and you have to have several different ways of getting by here in order to survive. So this is one of my September modes of survival in Port Townsend.
So the kids, therefore, could get on, take a ride, get off, get back in line, get on, take a ride.
Okay, that's a good question. Now, we have a ring-catching game. So The ring-catching game is actually a very old, traditional part of the carousel. It dates back to the times when the carousels were used as actually a military training device in the Middle East, 1,000 years ago, where the riders would sit on these little things and go around in a circle with a sword and practice whacking something. The Crusaders saw that when they came out there, took the idea back to Europe, put it into the castles, used it as a secret training device, and then eventually it got to the royalty. They were allowed to use them, and then eventually people like my family, the wagon makers, were allowed to make them. So the ring-catching game is a very old part of the carousel. So riding the carousel is riding and doing the ring-catching game. And I don't let my kids get off easy on this. You don't get to keep the ring. You get to toss the ring into the clown face, and you get points in the clown face, depending on which hole you go into. Then I can have, you know, 10 or 15 riders on it, and they catch the rings. And they know that they're going to have to get off the carousel, go collect all the rings, the ones that missed and the ones in the car, and get them reloaded into the ring grabber device and get out and back in line again before they get a ride again. But the deal is, once they get these kids figure it out really quick. Because I used to go collect the rings. I suddenly realized, wait a minute. These guys are the ones throwing them. They should be the ones collecting them. So we turn it into a sort of like a hide-and-seek game. And since we've done that, we don't lose any rings. It used to be we lost rings because, yeah, the kids would take them, or we just didn't. We said, oh, we can't find it. Okay, let's go anyway. And then these rings are not free.
This is amazing. Does this carousel come out at other times? Do you like just the once-a-year thing, or do you have other plans for it?
I would love to see it come out at other times. And it has come out at other times years ago. It's not the easiest thing to pull off. That's why I love doing it now, because it takes the right location and the right attitude, the right group. All sorts of stuff have to be right. My goal, actually, in the long term, is to find a home for this carousel in a place that has a lot of kid riders, where it can get a lot of use. I hate to see carousels not getting used. So that's half the reason why I put this at the Wood Boat Festival. I have it stored in my backyard, which I don't want to have it stored in my backyard. I want it working. It's really strong. It can work hard every day, all year long, and won't wear out.
Bill and I began to discuss a carousel project in Albany, Oregon, that is being funded, built, and run as a community project, something that Bill hopes Port Townsend might pull off as well someday. Called the Historic Carousel of Albany, this project pretty much got its start because Bill and his family agreed to provide one of their own antique yet reliable Dentsel carousel mechanisms for the project.
I found through the grapevine, just networking with people, that there was this little town in Oregon that actually wanted a carousel. So I contacted the people up in Albany, and we just started talking about it. I said, yeah, okay, well, let's do it.
So the mechanism began the whole project, in a sense.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's 100% what it was.
So there were no carvings, there were no drawings.
All there was a lady, Wendy, with an idea.
I love that.
And Wendy. I went and contacted Wendy. I said, hey, Wendy, we've got a carousel mechanism down here at my mom's house in Santa Barbara. My dad passed away. It's a wonderful old Gustav mechanism. I'd love to find a home for it and see if we can, do something with it. And she says, well, we're thinking about doing a carousel project, and maybe, we just talk more about it. And one of their local truckers said, hey, man, I'll go down and pick it up. He came down and picked it up. And then Carl Baker in Albany, who's an ex-aeronautical engineer, just, really tight and well-trained engineer, hand-working person, got that mechanism, took it apart, rebuilt it with his crew, put it back together again. I mean, it's unbelievable, this mechanism. It's the original, 60 feet in diameter. It's huge.
It's an incredible community project that might be something that Port Townsend would be very proud of if it could pull off, but it's one of the most amazing places to check out. And it's the community designs meaningful carousel animals with the help of artists and donations. And then a whole huge number of people dedicate themselves to carving these absolutely exquisite pieces that are going to go into a Dentsel mechanism. It's really one of the most incredible community projects I've ever seen, where there's
Tutoring, there's expert carvers, there's beginning carvers, there's a whole big room full of great gals, ladies, that are painting. And it's incredible. I mean, until you see it, you don't believe it. And there's nothing like it anywhere in the east or west coast of the United States. It's the most amazing carousel project you can imagine. That's all I can say.
How should people get a hold of you in order to either sponsor or sign up for seeing and living this incredible community resource of the carousel?
I don't mind giving my phone number out. You can call me up and we'll talk about it, which is a local number, 360-531-2812. You can try to message me through Facebook or Bill, I think it's William Dentzel, D-E-N-T-Z-E-L. I think that's what I am on Facebook.
Bill had brought along a few plain print-on-white paper flyers that he hands out.
I will. You know what I'll do? I'm going to leave a couple of these on the wall down here at Elevated Ice Cream. They have a little poster board down here, and I'll put one or two of these up just for anyone to see. They'll be over towards the entrance of the store.
Well, I just have to thank you, Bill, for coming and talking to me. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks. This has been real fun.
This is Monica Fletcher reporting for the KPTZ Compass.
This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans and Monica Fletcher. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.